what's up? Welcome to In the Thick. This is a podcast about politics, race, and culture from a POC perspective, and I am determined to stay upbeat. My name is Maria Hinojosa.
Is that your new first name? I am determined to stay upbeat, Maria Hinojosa. Then I have to say, and I am just as positive as you are, Julio Regalo Varela.
All right. Joining us, first timer in this first time reality, Washington, D.C., from her home, is Laura Barón López. She's national political reporter, Politico. Hey, Laura.
Hey, Maria.
You guys see her all the time on CNN. She's a badass. Laura, we're really excited to have you.
She is amazing.
And also,
thank you.
Calling us from his apartment in Brooklyn, New York, due to, yes, self-isolation we are all practicing, is one of our newest ITT all-stars, Astrid Herndon, a national political reporter with the New York Times. What's up, Astrid?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Awesome.
We're so happy to have you back. All right, you guys, so let's just do a reality check. Like, I really think we're all kind of coming to terms with what's happening. We're going to talk all about the latest, and we're going to talk politics, too. But we did want to start this episode by, yeah, how are you each personally doing in this moment? And I'll start with you, Astrid.
I feel like a lot of other Americans feel like they got a big dose of reality.
Yeah.
Part of being on the trail, I've been pretty isolated in the kind of build up to this. And then truly, I think it was in the last like 72 hours, the real severity of it all has sunk in. But I'm doing fine. I feel fine. All that stuff is going well and good. It just kind of throws up work things. It's hard to cover an election when there's no events happening.
Yeah. And there's like withdrawal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Laura, are you feeling a little bit of withdrawal as well?
I would say that I don't particularly like working from home. So I've realized that, but I'm trying to find ways so I don't go too stir crazy. I ordered some weights.
Nice.
But it's difficult to process sometimes when I really stop and think about it.
So Julio, you actually record this show from the basement of your home in the suburbs of Boston. Like, you've been working from home for a long time. This is like, yeah, what's up? It's like, you know,
yeah.
How are you doing?
We're doing good. I mean, what else can you say? I mean, I have my kids home, and that makes a difference. I mean, I think it's the moments like this when as a journalist, you realize your place as an informer. And from Friday, Maria, to now, it's cranked. I mean, now it's things are shutting down. So I'm ready. I mean, I've had my virtual newsroom here for years. I'm used to it. I'm used to dealing with being alone in the house, but now I have kids, so I'm okay. I'm making a big Puerto Rican pernil tonight. Also, that will turn into carnitas the next couple of days. So I'm trying to make the best of it. What about you?
You know, I remember when I was a correspondent at CNN and 9/11 happened. And, you know, we were used to getting on a plane every week, every other week. I was a national correspondent. And so I was flying all around the country all the time. And then after 9/11, you know, it was like, you're not getting on a plane. You're not going anywhere. This story is right here.
Yeah.
And it was actually really powerful for my family because we were together every single night, the way I'm going to be with my two kids and husband at home every
right.
single night now here in New York City. I've thought a lot about, you know, the way I'm thinking of this is self-sacrifice. Like, I know that because of my privilege, I'm informed, I'm healthy, I will probably stay healthy. You know, most people don't die from this, but it is highly contagious and you can die from it. So I'm taking a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
But there's a but. Do you start going into these scenarios that just get really kind of frightening? What about people who are sex workers who work on the street? What about, like, who's going to protect them? What about undocumented immigrants? Like, are they just going to now just be scooped up even more? Like, I don't, because I reel myself back. But are you guys going down that rabbit hole?
I would say I've gone down it a bit. I mean, I'm not as worried about myself. You know, I wrote out a long email to my family about my grandma, who is 83 years old, my nana. And I took it upon myself because I felt like, what if they aren't paying attention to the warnings? And I sent that email, you know, about 5 days ago now. And I said, you guys need to start staying away from her. and only bring her groceries and don't go near her if you're going to continue going out in public. You know, and I worry about other friends that I have that work more 9-to-5 jobs and could potentially, you know, go without paychecks if they get sent home. So I've started to spiral a bit in thinking about that, but then remind myself that I'll be prepared to help who I can. And, you know, I'm texting with my family probably more than I would in the past on a regular basis, just checking in since they're across the country. They're in California.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like there is something that is going to happen for families and for professionals. There is something that is going to happen to all of us. And I'm like, again, I'm trying to be like, and the silver lining, no hay mal que por bien no venga, you know, what are we going to learn from this? And so, yeah, there is that. I'm going to stay in touch with the people who maybe I don't call them as often. Now I'm calling them every single day.
Okay, so let's get into the latest with COVID-19. On Sunday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, they announced its recommendation to avoid mass gatherings of 50 or more people for the next 8 weeks. But then on Monday, President Trump announced in a press conference that people shouldn't gather in groups of more than 10 for the time being. So that changed over the course of 24 hours. And the new guidelines that came out also said that elderly people in the United States should stay home. In addition, more than a dozen states have announced school closures, including in New York City, which is the country's largest school district. So in New York City, Los Angeles, Seattle, and in other places, you have bars, restaurants, gyms, and retail businesses shutting down. Puerto Rico, where I'm from, has implemented a curfew, but the biggest directive yet in the United States was announced on Monday for the city of San Francisco. People in San Francisco have been told to shelter at home, and despite the Federal Reserve slashing interest rates to nearly zero, trading came to a halt Monday morning because U.S. stocks dropped below 8%. So we know the economic impact has already been devastating, and it's going to continue.
So, you know, the question is, do they have enough tests, too? Because a lot of what we're hearing is that people would like to get the test, and they just can't, because you're going to have to be very sick in order to get that test or be from a vulnerable group.
I mean, exactly, Maria. But there's also been all this reporting on how the wealthy and powerful are getting access to all these tests before everyday people. I mean, for example, the Utah Jazz professional basketball team, they managed to get tests like immediately. One thing I read about this whole Utah Jazz testing, and it was in the Atlantic, at the time, they took 20% of all the testing kits that were in Utah, physically available in Utah.
Whoa.
Think about that. But still, it's also important to note that in the United States, at least 89 people have died from the disease. And globally, there are over 180,000 cases. And while nearly half of those cases, the people have recovered, there's been more than 7,000 deaths. Sadly, the numbers continue to rise daily. So it's almost like by the time this episode drops, the more we're going to be impacted by this pandemic. But the thing is, we have examples from other countries that we can learn from. So one example, 2 weeks ago, I remember if you guys saw these images, there were tourists that were still out in Italy. But this past Sunday, 368 people died in one day. But people here in the United States, I mean, they were still going out this past weekend. Maybe it's because of the initial mixed messaging from our government. But doctors and scientists have been stressing that we need to curb this spread by social distancing. We know that some people still have to go to work and they're exposing themselves, like those in healthcare, sanitation workers, etc. My mom, who's a retired nurse in New York, like she is getting extra work. And I worry about that. I worry about my mom. But Laura, why is it so hard for Americans to understand the importance of social distancing?
Part of it is the mixed messaging. Part of it is that from the top officials in our country, you know, starting with the president, there's been mixed messaging about what the younger population should be doing. And the president has consistently said, young people, you're going to be fine, without saying, oh, by the way, though, you can spread this. So practice social distancing. This isn't just for the older population, that if you're hanging out with a bunch of other young people and you're just spreading it amongst yourselves, you become vectors who can then go carry it to the next person you're in contact with, who can then go carry it to like an older loved one that they have. And so I've seen, you know, bars in D.C. had lines out the door over the weekend.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, that was common. In Boston, too. It happened in Boston. Yep.
Out the door?
Yeah. I saw some friends of mine on social media posting about being at bars in Chicago, and I was getting very frustrated. And I feel as though part of it was that so much of the conversation around the coronavirus has been focused on older people, as it should be. But the younger population bears responsibility in being able to stop the spread of this disease as well.
So, Astrid, it was interesting because I had to come out today. It's Monday. And my daughter, who's being brought back from college, you know, and she started lecturing me. And I was a little bit like, wow, I don't need a police from my daughter. And then she sent me something from CNN, Sanjay Gupta, who's a friend of mine. I listened to it and I was just like, you know, feeling better about these things. But how are you getting access to the information, or what are you looking for? Are you still at the point where you're like, I can't believe I'm not jumping on a plane right now? What the hell just happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I've been trying to stay on top of the information. And for the people who like rely on me for information, my family and close friends, making sure I'm getting that out to them. My family is in Illinois, which votes. And so we had a discussion this morning about whether they wanted to vote, how safe that was. My father's also a pastor, and so the kind of church gathering we talked about this weekend, it's been a situation in which it's fluid, is obviously escalating rapidly. I mean, myself, I had gone to like a small gathering on Friday under the guise of we were going to stay far away enough from each other. And that's probably not something I would have done 2 days later. And so I think that, you know, as the information develops, we can all try to do the best we can, particularly for the people who are the most threatened, just making sure they have a handle on all the kind of necessary information was my kind of foremost concern.
Yeah. So there's, I got to be honest with you, you know, Sunday night I get the text, you know, from my ITT team and they're like, the debate. And I was just like, oh shit. Seriously, I was like the last thing. I mean, I know that the both of you, Laura, you were on set at CNN. Astrid, I'm sure
Laura
you were.
Laura had to work it.
Laura was working it, you know, but I had spent that day kind of prepping my apartment, getting ready for my daughter's arrival, et cetera, connecting to nature, walking the dog. So, okay, the truth is I started watching it and I did tweet this out. I feel bad because I was like, I think I tuned in right at the part where they were like spit spatting at each other and was like, no, I did this and no, I did this and can't you admit it? And I just like,
that's how they talked.
I tweeted something out and I was like, oh my God, abuelitos fighting, you know, grandpa's fighting, not a good look. But, you know, things did happen. Joe Biden said that he would pick a woman as a VP and a black woman for the Supreme Court of the United States. Not a surprise, maybe a little pandering, but Sanders said this about whether or not he would name a woman as a running mate.
The vice president committed to picking a woman as his running mate. If you get the nomination, will you?
In all likelihood, I will. For me, it's not just nominating a woman. It is making sure that we have a progressive woman, and there are progressive women out there. So my very strong tendency is to move in that direction.
So a lot going on in terms of healthcare and obviously the response to the coronavirus.
Right. And, you know, it just showed how different the two candidates are. There was a big contrast. It basically came down to Biden. Not much systemic change. And Bernie's like, let's change everything. Basically, Biden was like, yeah, there's no need for a revolution. Sanders was like, yeah, this coronavirus crisis is exposing exactly what is the biggest problem with America. Honestly, also, Univision and CNN, I was really excited for the Latin American section, but quite predictable that it was about Fidel Castro, about a dead dictator, and it just kind of glossed over. And so that kind of was weird. And also when Biden tossed out
anyone who shows up to be tested for coronavirus or gets coronavirus and is treated would be held harmless, just like I've argued all along. Any woman who crosses the border or is here and being beaten by her husband, but she's an undocumented, she cannot be deported because she reports. There are certain things you cannot deport an undocumented alien for, an undocumented person for.
Boy,
he quickly backtracked, but everyone was like, what?
Did you groan at that moment, Laura?
Oh, I... I cringed a tiny bit. Yes, because
a little cringe.
It was a cringe, not a groan.
Yeah, because it made sense to me that Biden would do that, just because it's a phrase that he likely used in the past, and he realized that he shouldn't anymore, and so he quickly corrected himself to say undocumented immigrants. But you know what I found more interesting about that whole exchange was, and when we saw the Trump administration immediately seized on it, was him saying that his 100-day moratorium on deportations would include everyone. And then it's after the 100 days that he would focus on deporting felons. And Trump's campaign immediately started tweeting it out, seizing on the fact that his 100-day halt would include immigrants who had committed felonies. And it's just a picture of what's to come in the general. And I had spoken to a lot of immigrant rights advocates ahead of the debate, and they had expressed a lot of frustration about the fact that Democrats, whether it's Sanders, Biden, or even the ones that used to be in the race, haven't focused on immigration that much as, you know, key parts of their stump speech or when they're on the campaign trail, and feeling as though they're ceding a lot of ground to Trump and his campaign and allowing them to define Democrats on this issue, when it's clear that based on 2016 and based on even the 2018 midterms, that President Trump wants to make this a big part of his reelection bid.
Right. I said, like, the one thing that I thought about the debate was the whole question of why Biden isn't getting Latino support.
Well, look, my message is resonating across the board. Every single state we've been in, there's been a significant turnout. In Virginia, turnout was up 70%. They voted for me. He didn't bring them out. I brought them out. And number two, look what's happened in Mississippi. Look what's happened in North Carolina. Look what's happened in Washington State. Look what's happened across the board. Why is it that I'm winning all those places? What's the reason? What's the reason? The reason is because they know I am a Democrat with a capital D who, in fact, believes that our base is the base of the Democratic Party, which are hardworking men and women who, in fact, are high school educated, African-Americans and minorities, including Hispanics, but all minorities.
But then why Bernie isn't getting black support?
Here is what I believe is happening, and this is an important point, and why I decided to run for president. I think it's imperative that we defeat Trump. I think our campaign of a biracial, bigenerational, multigenerational grassroots movement is the way to do it. Now, we have won some states. Joe has won more states than I have. But here's what we are winning. We are winning the ideological struggle, even in states like Mississippi, where Joe won a major victory. Turns out that a pretty good majority of the folks there believe in Medicare for all. And that's true in almost every state in this country. And the other issue that we don't talk enough about is we are winning the generational struggle.
Break that part down. What did you think about all that? Because they didn't give an answer, either one of them, right? Or what do you think?
Yeah, I think that neither of them gave a real answer to that question. And it's an important one. I think this primary, we have had divides in terms of which candidates are pulling support from different demographics. Sanders is winning and doing better among mostly under 40 people. The electorate has skewed older, which has helped Biden, particularly with older black voters. We know that black voters, by and large, are older than Latino voters, and that has worked to Biden's advantage. But also, we might see some of those numbers shift. In the Tuesday primaries, Biden looks a lot better in Florida. He looks a lot better in Arizona. That could help him kind of reverse what we saw in Nevada and what we saw kind of elsewhere in the West. So I think it's a good reminder of the diversity of these electorates, but it was kind of disappointing to not see the candidates themselves speak to that point. You know, we can make the arguments about why Sanders hasn't done as well among black voters or explain why Biden hasn't, to this point, been able to do what he's been able to do with black voters among Latino voters, but they should be able to also. And they really punted on that opportunity.
Hey, we're back. You're listening to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa with my co-host, Julio Ricardo Varela. We're joined virtually, all of us virtually connected this week by Laura Barron Lopez and ITT All-Star Astet Herndon. Let's get back to the conversation.
All right, guys. So let's turn to the primaries that are actually happening on Tuesday. So March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, Arizona, Florida, and Illinois are voting. Ohio was scheduled to vote, but then on Monday evening, the state's health director ordered the polls closed as a public health emergency. This came after a judge in Ohio denied the governor, Mike DeWine, his request to close the polls. So what we know is Ohio, they're not holding primaries on Tuesday. A reminder, we're recording this before we have any election results, so make sure to check out Friday's sound off for that. But this is the part that, like, these are really important swing states. I mean, Arizona and Florida, those are states that you can win the presidency with in November. And of course, we're seeing how this pandemic is already impacting this primary season. So Louisiana, Georgia, and Kentucky have already postponed their primaries. Puerto Rico and New York are going to likely do the same thing. Wyoming has suspended its in-person caucusing and will be voting entirely by mail and a ballot drop-off system. Other states are considering similar options. Laura, you've been covering campaigns. How will this pandemic affect the 2020 election? And also, can you add a little bit about Asted's point about Black and Latino voters? Because there was a new poll that came out of Florida, right?
Yeah, so I think that heading into Arizona and Florida, we could see a very different turnout from Latino voters. Arizona is 86% Mexican is their ethnic origin, the Latino population there. And typically, you know, Mexicans in the Southwest have gone towards Sanders, but Arizona is a very different state than California, as we all well know. And it looks as though Biden could actually maybe split the Latino vote with Sanders there. Of course, younger Latinos do flock more to Sanders. Florida, you know, the poll that just came out today from Univision was pretty surprising, I thought, just because it had Biden up with Latino voters, 48-40 against Sanders. And then when you broke it down with Cubans, Sanders was ahead by 1 point with Biden. So, you know, it's pretty much a statistical tie amongst Cubans, wow, which is surprising considering the fact that I think a lot of us had assumed that because of Sanders' past comments about Castro, that Cubans would not be as favorable towards him. And then amongst Puerto Ricans, Biden is, you know, beating Sanders by a considerable margin, 53-38%.
So Puerto Ricans in Florida are really feeling some Biden right there.
Yeah, it's not surprising.
But I mean, this is, oh my God, that's fascinating that the Cubans are going 1 point higher for Sanders than Biden. Julio, just can you clear this up? Because, you know, you would think that Puerto Ricans would be super radical.
No.
Considering everything they've been through and the level of disrespect that they've had from this particular president, you'd be thinking like revolution, Bernie Sanders, but they're actually going for Biden. So you want to give us the 30-second, like, what's up with that?
Yeah, Puerto Ricans in general from Democratic Party, conservative establishment Democrats. So I actually think that the core Democratic base in Puerto Rico is kind of like Black voters. So not surprised at all. There's a history of establishment candidates doing very well there. Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, and now Joe Biden. And the other thing is, Maria, Carmen Yulín Cruz is the mayor of San Juan. Incredibly controversial, might be loved by white liberal progressives, but is seen as, like, you know, too far to the left. And she is the campaign co-chair of Bernie Sanders' campaign. And there's a lot of Puerto Ricans who don't like her and have associated her to Bernie Sanders. Hmm. So that's also part of it. So, you know, anyway, we'll see what happens in Florida.
You guys, you got to love the American electorate. Asted, are you as confused by all of it? Or not. I mean, this particular Univision poll is definitely like, whoa, fascinating.
Yeah.
Is it confusing to you or surprising to you? And what are you thinking about in terms of the upcoming primaries and what this, are you feeling a little bit of voter suppression-y internalized? You know, would we all be going to vote right now or not?
Yeah, I think those are going to be huge questions. What is the turnout that we're going to see? We do know among older voters in Florida and Arizona, those are big vote by mail states. A lot of that vote's already been done. But particularly in Illinois, I mean, I just literally talked to my mom seconds before here, and they're thinking about whether or not it's worth to go out there. And in that state, which is particularly a significant African-American population in Cook County, you wonder if Biden does get depressed turnout there. To speak to the Univision poll, I mean, we know that it's going to be interesting to see whether that is an outlier or plays out, that the number right. among Cuban Americans certainly out to me also. But we know that, you know, a lot of the folks who have been particularly upset about those comments have already drifted to the Republican side anyway, so they might Correct. Not be included in that Correct. Primary electorate. It'll be interesting to see whether the sense of inevitability helps Biden, whether the fact that he has already won these states on Super Tuesday and last week just gives it a sense that he's the eventual nominee, the likely nominee, yes. and that allows people to coalesce. But we are seeing across the country and some other states, well, some people just wanted this primary to be over. They're ready to go up for a general election against Donald Trump. And that was helping right. Biden in some places. We'll see if that holds up.
All right, guys, let's move on to our final segment, which we're calling COVID coping.
What's something that you're doing, looking at, watching, thinking about, reading a piece of art that's kind of helping you to cope? So we'll start with you, Ested. What are you, how are you COVID coping?
I am finishing my first watch of The Sopranos, which makes me very yes. late for the rest of the country, but I've never seen it before.
Happy now? What did I tell you?
It's a fucking speed trap.
License, registration, and insurance card, please.
You're with the township, right? I think I had dinner with your boss last week, Tony Soprano.
Would you please remove the license from the wallet? Do you know why I stopped you, sir?
Yeah, I do. I'll tell you what. Why don't you and your wife have dinner? I'm me, and you can tell her about it.
You offering me a bribe, sir?
Of course not. You gotta relax a little.
I'm so glad to know I'm not the only one who's super late to everything. Oh, thank God.
I just watched that a year ago, so I love it.
Okay,
I'm still,
great,
I'm
great.
Still shaking
I enjoy it. I'm like halfway through. I'm deciding what, but I've decided I'm going to get really good at a video game, like something I've never played before. And so I had this like Xbox that just kind of sat in my apartment kind of untouched. But one of my missions today is to like choose a game and decide by the end of this kind of quarantine session, I'm going to get really proficient. So I'll update you on what game I decide.
I love it. Laura, what you doing? How you COVID coping?
So I've been watching Better Call Saul, you know, the spinoff from Breaking Bad.
Yes, good stuff.
I'm really enjoying it. I've realized that I need to make a better home office space for myself. So I'm trying
DM me. I got tips. Yeah,
okay,
I got tips.
Okay, great. Because I probably need to buy a new desk and a new chair. Since, like I said earlier, I don't particularly like working from home. So I'm trying to make it as appealing as possible. And then other than that, just, you know, taking my dog on walks and trying to utilize, you know, Rock Creek Park, which is right near where I live in DC, which I don't that much typically. So trying to get out in the little nature that we have in the city as much as I can.
What's your doggy's name? What kind of dog is it?
He's a shepherd mix. He's about medium sized. His name is Strider from Lord of the Rings. I am a big Lord of the Rings nerd.
I can avoid being seen if I wish, but to disappear entirely, that is a rare gift.
Who are you?
Are you frightened?
Yes.
Not nearly frightened enough. I know what hunts you.
Which is also something that I'll put on and I'll have it playing in the background when I'm just like cleaning my apartment.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Therapeutic for me.
While she's eating her nopales, she'll be having Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Walter, my mini pincher chihuahua mix, who I've never had a dog up until just last year. My son brought him home. He's in my lap right now as I'm recording. And you know what I think is going to be like There are going to be winners in my apartment, and they are called succulents. I am repotting. I am replanting. I am, like, growing little roots. I'm now able to water them as much as I want. I'm not going to over. So I'm going to take pictures of before and after COVID for my succulents. Awesome. How are you COVID coping, Julio?
It's simple. I'm not even, it's the sun. The sun in my house, natural lighting. I go outside of my porch. I soak up the sun, to quote Sheryl Crow. I'm sorry. That's all I'm doing. I really am enjoying the spring-like weather, and that's helping me get through it. It's wanting what you've got. I'm gonna soak up the sun. I'm gonna tell everyone to lighten up. I'm gonna tell them that
All right. Beautiful. Laura Baron Lopez, national political reporter at Politico, and ITT All-Star Sted Herndon, national political reporter with The New York Times. Thank you so much for joining Julio and me on this episode of In the Thick. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
And remember, dear listener, well, now more than ever, because you're at home and you have the time to take a moment to rate and review us.
Yeah.
Just go to Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
You remember, you can listen to In the Thick on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you happen to choose to get your podcasts today. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell all your friends virtually to listen to In the Thick. In the Thick is produced by Nicole Rothwell, Noor Saudi, and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow, Harsha Nahata. Our audio engineers are Stephanie Lebeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and CZK Records. Dear listener, thank you so much for clicking play on your phone and listening to us in this very particular time. I know a lot of us are feeling really discombobulated, and it's going to take all of us kind of saving each other. This is our work, but it's also our gift to you, and we give it to you with so much love. Right, Julio?
Yeah.
It's great to be on the air with you virtually yet again, and I'll see you on the next episode.
Yeah, we love ITT listeners. Stay safe, guys.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.